Enjoy this short story entitled Ice Capades, written by Harold Tomesch for Writers Weekly.
On December 6th, Milwaukee wore frost like powdered sugar on Christmas cookies. Tina found a note tucked beneath her windshield wiper just as the sun was beginning to give birth to the day. She almost didn't see it. Her mind danced like sugar plums, asking, rather cruelly, what if Betty doesn't make it? What if this is the Christmas I learn how to say goodbye? Those thoughts had become familiar, like little leather-soled demons tapping incessantly across the floor of her mind. The note fluttered against the glass and read, meet me in the hospital atrium at 7 p.m. I have news for Betty. Come alone. St. Nick. Tina stood still. St. Luke's parking lot throbbed with idling engines, cruel in its normalcy. People carried away their Starbucks treasures, Venti non-fat lattes, and the like. Doors slammed, tires shushed over slush. Somewhere, someone laughed into a phone as if laughter had not been outlawed by Betty's failing heart. Tina had spent all night moving through the hospital like a ghost assigned to haunt her own child. Betty lay in her surgery ward, her cheeks pale against the whiter sheets, her heart monitor ticking out time like a metronome of grief. Dilated cardiomyopathy, they called it. A phrase too long, too clinical for a heart one beat away from surrender. Tina read the note twice over as if repetition could make sense of it. St. Nick, on December 6th. Cute, maybe, cruel, possibly, insane, definitely. Across the lot, a man in a red cap scraped ice from his windshield. He had spent all night filling shoes on windowsills with chocolate. His shoulders were rounded against the cold, his motions ordinary enough to disappear into the morning. He was watching. Tina didn't notice. He watched her regularly, watched the way she folded herself small into waiting room chairs, making room for grief as if it were another family member. He watched the way she pressed her lips to Betty's forehead, as if sealing in God's blessing at the end of each day. He watched how she smoothed Betty's blankets when there was nothing else to fix, how her hands kept working because her heart could not bear to be still. He had watched her when he penned the note, careful and deliberate. It was fragile, a final prescription, not written for Betty's body, but for Tina's soul. He watched now as Tina's shoulders lifted. She looked around, eyes skittering like skates on thin ice. Then she tucked the note into her coat pocket and walked toward the hospital doors, where warmth and worry breathed in unison. Betty lay in the surgery ward. Her hair, once a black spill of curls, had been braided loosely to keep it from tangling around the tubes and wires. Her heart monitor sometimes skipped a beat like a stone too heavy to skip far in the water. Its green line rose and fell, a tiny electric mountain range Tina had learned to worship. Dilated cardiomyopathy. Tina hated the sound of it. It was the kind of phrase like a wild predator who bore sharp teeth. Betty was 12, though illness had made her look both younger and older. Younger when she slept with her stuffed polar bear under one arm. Older when she asked questions no child should have to ask. Mom, Betty whispered, her voice thin as paper held up to light. Tina leaned closer. I'm right here, baby. If I don't get better, will you still take my skates to the pond for me? Tina swallowed. The room blurred, then steadied. Those skates sat in her trunk, wrapped in silver paper, the old white ones with frayed laces and scuffed toes. Betty's last wish was simple. Let them glide once more. Before hospitals, before medications with names like foreign cities, before Betty's lips sometimes turned blue from walking to the bathroom, there had been ice. There had been the pond near the Winterfest shop. There, Betty could be seen spinning in circles until Tina shouted, "You'll drill a hole to China!" And Betty shouted back, "Then I'll skate in China, too!" Her dream had always been the ice capades. Not in the casual way children say they want to be astronauts or princesses or veterinarians for unicorns. Betty meant it with the grave certainty of a saint receiving godly instructions. "I will," Tina promised, because mothers promise impossible things every day. Betty smiled faintly. "Don't let them sit in the trunk forever. Skates get lonely." "Skates are dramatic," Tina said. Betty's smile widened. "They get it from me." Tina laughed, but her voice broke in the middle. The afternoon stretched. Nurses came and went with practiced kindness. Machines beeped. Snow tapped softly at the window as if winter itself wanted in. Tina held Betty's hand and tried not to check her phone every 30 seconds. At 5 o'clock, Tina walked to her car. The sky had darkened to the color of pewter found on the canvases of the old masters. She opened the trunk and stared at the wrapped shoebox. The silver paper shone with brittle cheerfulness. A bow sat on top, ridiculous and bright like a joke told at a funeral. Across the lot, the man in the red cap watched her hesitate. Tina didn't notice. She ran her hand over the gift. The old skates were inside, cleaned as best she could manage. She had planned to take them to the pond after visiting hours, lace them herself with numb fingers, and push them once across the ice for Betty, a mother's small, heartbreaking pageant, the final performance of a dream. Then her phone rang. She answered with trembling fingers. The voice on the other end was careful, steady, and familiar. "Tina, this is Doctor." Her breath stopped. Doctors did not call with casual voices. Doctors called like pilots announcing turbulence over dark oceans. "We found a match," he said, "a donor heart. We're confirming measurements and final compatibility now." Her world shifted. Not violently, more like a frozen river cracking open beneath sunlight. Tina pressed her free hand to her mouth. The parking lot, the cars, the hospital walls, all of it tilted toward impossible mercy. "A heart," she whispered. "Yes," he said, "a heart." The word was so small for what it meant. 5 letters to hold a future. 5 letters to unlock the wordle of birthdays, summers, skating lessons, first loves, arguments about homework, and Christmas mornings not spent under fluorescent lights. "When?" she asked. "Tonight, if final checks remain good." When the call ended, Tina cried, wine scraping her cheeks raw. The silver-wrapped gift no longer felt like mercy. It felt like surrender. It felt like a rehearsal for grief she was no longer willing to attend. Tina lifted the box from the trunk. She held it for a long moment, remembering Betty at 7 years old, wobbling on the pond with her arms out like airplane wings. Then she carried it to the Goodwill bin and set it gently inside, as if burying a corpse. Across the lot, the man in the red cap lowered his phone. He closed his eyes briefly, not in sorrow, but in confirmation. Hope had been received. He began humming a tune as if making a list and checking it twice. "I see you when you're sleeping. I know when you're awake. I know if your heart's been bad or good, so be strong for goodness sake." Tina got into her car. She should have gone back inside. She should have sat beside Betty and waited like a sensible woman. Instead, she drove off uncontrolled. St. Nick followed hurriedly. She drove to the local outdoor skating rink, the one with the Winterfest shop and strings of yellow lights that made the snow look like falling sparks. Children shrieked with laughter on the ice. Couples swayed hand in hand. A teenage boy in a tuck-in green and gold tried to impress a girl and immediately fell backward, which, Tina thought, was probably how romance usually worked. She walked into the shop with red-rimmed eyes and fierce purpose. A clerk looked up from behind the counter. He couldn't have been more than 17, with acne, a Santa apron, and the stunned expression of someone not prepared for a woman on the edge of a miracle. "I need the best pair of skates you have," Tina said breathlessly, "for a girl who's going to skate in the ice capades." The boy blinked. "Figure skates?" "The kind that make dreams form double axles," Tina said. He grinned, startled by her intensity, then nodded as if she had given him a sacred commission. "Size?" Tina told him. "Color?" Tina told him. He disappeared into the back and returned with a white pair wrapped in tissue. The leather was smooth as fresh snow. The blades flashed under the shop light, silver and severe, like 2 narrow promises. "These are the best in the shop," he said. "Really fine, ma'am." "They need to be," Tina replied, handing him her credit card. Outside, near the frozen pond, she paused with the new white skates cradled in her arms. In summer, this place had been their beach. Betty used to sit at the edge of the water, eating cherry-flavored ice and announcing her future fame to ducks. Now the ice gleamed like polished marble. The lamps turned the surface blue, then gold, then ghostly white. Tina imagined Betty there, not pale against sheets, but alive beneath applause. Betty gliding, leaping, spinning. Betty bowing in sequins under a spotlight. Betty living long enough to outgrow the dream and choose another. Her eyes darted across the pond and back. Quick, disbelieving. Was this foolish, dangerous, too soon? From the shadows, the man in the red cap watched her scanning gaze, relieved she was embracing a future. He had seen that look before, parents standing at the edge of operating room surgical theater before he made his first incision. The look that asked the universe, "Are you sure? Is this allowed? May I hope without being punished?" He had watched her read the note, watched her throw away goodbye. Now he watched her purchase beginnings instead. At 7 p.m., the hospital atrium glowed with Christmas. Volunteers bustled around trays of cookies. Children in paper crowns laughed near the tree. A choir from a nearby school sang slightly off-key, which somehow made the song more beautiful, because perfection is overrated and children know it. Tina walked in, clutching the figure skates. Near the tree sat a man, St. Nicholas, in costume, crimson velvet, white beard, spectacles perched on a thoughtful nose. He rose to greet her, the red fabric catching the gold light. "You came," he said warmly. She studied him. "The note?" "Yes." His eyes were kind and knowing. "You received my call," he asked. Tina stared. "You found a heart?" "We did," he said, "and I have confirmed Betty is strong enough for surgery tonight." Tears slid down her cheeks without permission. "Why the note? Why not just tell me?" He smiled gently, because sometimes hope needs ceremony. For a moment she could not speak. She only held the skates tighter as if they might float away. A nurse approached, breathless and radiant. "Tina, we're ready to talk with you and Betty. The transplant team is assembled," she said, doctor winking in his direction. Tina laughed through her disbelief. "Betty's going to skate," she said, holding up the box as if it were proof of life itself. "Yes," he said confidently, "she will." As Tina turned toward the elevators, the bearded man removed his hat and beard, revealing surgeon's hands and clear, intelligent eyes. "My name, believe it or not, is Dr. Nicholas Christmas," he said, "chief cardiac surgeon here at St. Luke's." Tina gave a wet, astonished laugh. "Of course it is." "Tina," he asked, "do you want to break the good news to Betty, or should I?" She looked down at the skates, white as December moonlight. "How about I give Betty her new figure skates first?" Dr. Christmas smiled. "All right then," he said, "and after that, I will literally show Betty her new heart packed on ice." He glanced toward the elevators, where life waited like frosted breath. The doors opened. "The Icecapades," he said, "call skating in pairs, dancing out of the shadows."